Welcome, everyone, to THP Radio. I'm your host, JB, and today we have a new episode of The Dean Has Spoken. This show is co-hosted by none other than THP staff writer extraordinaire Dean, and he can be found on the THP forum as well on Twitter at Dean of THP. Welcome, Dean.
Hi, Josh. Welcome. I'm glad to be back.
It's going to be a good show. The Dean Has Spoken is a new twist on your on-demand audio in the world of golf. We'll be discussing equipment, tour golf, the industry happenings, and anything else that strikes our fancy, with the key here being that the Dean of THP will always have the final word. The way the show works is easy. There are 5 topics, 10 arguments, but only one right answer, and because he's the Dean, he's going to let you know what that is. Today we have a little bit of a special episode, as we're going to discuss some deeper off... It's already starting, huh, Dean? We're going to discuss some deeper golf industry topics, and therefore, instead of presenting both sides of the argument, we're going to have kind of an open-ended discussion, because these are some hot topics that really haven't been reported anywhere else, and I think it's important that our readers and listeners kind of know what's going on in the industry. So are you ready to get this thing started?
I'm ready. It's a lot of big news. I hope people are excited and ready for it.
So let's kick it off with the first topic. Callaway Live kicked off Season 2 recently with Phil Mickelson as a guest. They've already had some others on. What do you think of Callaway Live as a platform for golfers?
You know, for golfers, it's such an interesting and different concept. You know, Callaway's been at the forefront a lot of the social media, outbreak in the world of golf and in sports marketing in general. And we noticed it really last year, or last PGA show, when they brought in Jeff Newbarth, when we just met him. He kind of told us what was going to be happening, and we were like, oh, all right, let's wait and see. That could be cool. But I like it. It's really blossomed. It's gotten better. I know Harry Arnett has said it was strong negotiating to get Season 2 back on. They started Season 2 with Phil. It gives you a little bit of a glimpse into the softer side of some of these personalities that come on. They're not all golfers, and it ties in the Callaway brand as well. So it's a good way to reach out to consumers.
Yeah, you know, I like the show, and I like it more for a number of different reasons. Number one, you know, yes, we're friendly with them. The show, and this is, I'll give a shout out to Jeff Newbarth. He's very talented. Just ask him. No, I'm kidding. He's very talented, and the show is so well produced from that angle. You forget that it's a golf company. You forget that it's a brand, and, you know, they produce consumer goods in a luxury market. My take on it after Season 1 was that the show was really well done. There were some guests that I didn't understand. Now, when you speak to Jeff, the shows that featured like a band and things like that, it makes all the sense in the world. It's expanding their audience to people who may not be avid golfers enough to jump in and watch Callaway Live, but now they would watch Callaway Live because their band was on. But the flip side of that is, like, there were a couple of shows last year that left me shaking my head. I like Shane Bacon. I've played golf with Shane Bacon at Bandon Dunes years ago. I didn't understand that show. I ended up turning it off halfway through. And there were some others like that. But this year it seems so polished and so ready that, I really looked forward to each guest. I actually thought the Phil show kicking it off was fantastic.
Yeah, the Phil show was really cool. You know, the big segment of him talking about tinkering and bringing in stuff from home, you know, trying to get a thinner spatula so he could flip the burgers better and fix the toaster so that the bread comes out straighter and not at an angle. You know, that kind of stuff was, it's funny, it's silly. And but like I said, it brings in a different audience. And you were mentioning, you know, some of like the bands that they had on last year. I can't think of the guy's name, but he was, you know, a skateboarder that came in. That's not my audience or my, you know, who I would follow. But, you know, Callaway did this outside of that as well, doing some stuff with the Bryan Brothers and Dude Perfect. So they're trying to definitely, you know, broaden the horizon, get the more demographics out there, people that pay attention to other people, you know, have them look in on Callaway because they get tied into it.
Agreed. And, you know, I actually applaud the effort to step out of the comfort zone and become a brand and produce content. And like I said, the stuff that they are producing, forget the fact that it's Callaway, forget the fact, it's very well done. And, you know, kudos to Jeff for the work there. I know he puts a lot into it. And it is noticed.
Yeah, very much so. You know, it's been you know, at least popular on our site. We know people watch it, people talk about it. So we hope it continues. And it's good to see a golf company, again, you know, saying they are a golf company, step out, you know, outside the box and do something different.
We're going to move on to a different topic, the second topic of the day. And this one is rather unique. And, you know, Cleveland Golf has major changes going on. This hasn't been reported anywhere as of yet, so consider it breaking news if it matters to you. Cleveland Strixon, Zexio, you know, the one brand, they're based out of Huntington Beach, made major changes in their office. It seems like basically most of the marketing team, maybe half, three quarters of it, gone. I'm not going to mention any names because I don't think that's appropriate. But there are people that we know that we work with, the THPers have met at events and things like that. They're no longer part of the company. They've brought in Mike Powell, who was Cleveland Golf South Africa, and then I believe Cleveland Golf Europe. Done a fantastic job. I met him last week. Really good guy. I like his accent, but that's neither here nor there. Major changes in a segment where they've been headed, you could argue, the wrong direction in at least the U.S. market as of late. What do you make of it?
I'm still kind of scratching my head over it. I don't. It's hard for me to wrap my hands around it and know what's going on, because they're getting rid of. They do need some changes. They've needed some changes. Cleveland's been, you know, they've been going in a different direction now for a little while. I'm not sure what changing the whole marketing team for the brand is going to do. So I'm assuming that it's not just stopping there.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. You know, I agree that changes were needed. Change for change's sake, sometimes not the best idea, but that wasn't really the case here. I think that they made some good moves based on, you know, the outside looking in and what I viewed, and some decisions that made me scratch my head a little bit. But, you know, I root for them. You know, they're a partner of THP. We enjoy working with them. We have a lot of stuff coming up with them. You never want to see good people go also, you know, that's part of that, but it was really, kind of a head scratcher for me for some of those people.
Now, you could correct me if I'm wrong. The president that took over Cleveland Golf, he hasn't been there too long. Could it be just something of, you know, new president bringing in his own people?
You could make that case. The president, you know, coming from the Asian market, I'm guessing Mike Powell has had a lot of work done with them. And if the rumors are true, the person that was at Cleveland Golf here, who went to go to Cleveland Golf Japan for a couple of years, that would be coming back into a certain role. That may, if that's actually true, then yes, you could say that. But it doesn't feel that way, if that makes sense. All I look at it is, you know, you have a team in place and changes had to be made. I agree with that. But changes have to be made to make something better. And the timing is what kind of shocked me here, because you're halfway into the year. The release, you have new releases coming. Those have already been, you know, talked about, and some that haven't been talked about that are coming real soon. You know, based on math, it's not hard to figure out that Cleveland Golf will launch a wedge this year. You know, every 2 years they do that. So the timing was what was interesting to me. So it's going to be very interesting for guys who follow the golf industry to follow this one, because like I said, it hasn't been talked about anywhere, and there were a large number of people that were let go.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see where it goes. Hopefully it gets Cleveland going in the right direction. You know, we've seen the parent company stuff with Zexio and with Strixon. That stuff's been going well. Now hopefully it pulls Cleveland up there as well.
Let's move on to the next topic, and it's kind of another golf industry topic that's a head-scratcher. But before we go on, I want to remind everybody that they can discuss these topics and all the topics on the THP forum with thousands of golfers every single day. And of course, you can follow, discuss, debate, and interact with both myself and the Dean of THP on Twitter, at THP Golf and at Dean of THP. So going back to another industry topic.
Hold on. Yeah. We need to get like a big breaking news audio clip here, because once again, that's what we have. And it's just us saying, hey, breaking news. We need something special. You know, dun, dun, dun.
You could say, instead of, hey, it's just us saying breaking news, you could get a little more excited about it.
Yeah.
I guess that's no.
On with the – we've got breaking news.
Breaking news as I take a sip of my Fresca. It's a little different than my old-fashioned last episode. Grandora Shafts came on the scene pretty hot, immediately went out on tour, got play on tour, and now it looks like they're going away. I've been close to this one, so I'm going to be as on point as I can here. The story is BST Nano, the company behind the brand Grandora Shafts, has essentially been tied up. They owned Ellsworth Bikes. They owned a paddleboard company. They owned Grandora, and they were looking to expand, and their funding was in and is in. I saw rumors out there that they lost their funding. That is not the case. And this is as of just a few days ago when I was actually there. The company sold off the bike company, sold off the paddleboard company, and basically decided to move it into a different direction. The people behind the brand want to get involved with one group. The people with the money that kind of funded the thing say, nah, not so fast. We want to do it this way. So the people behind Grandora that they brought in said, well, we can't risk that, and we're going to take our ball and go home, which makes all the sense in the world. And there's more to it than that. But what are your thoughts? I mean, they came in fast, hard, and with a product that was excellent.
The biggest question mark this leaves to me, and it was something that you and I had asked other shaft manufacturers when we were out in California last year, is what does this mean potentially for nanotechnology in graphite shafts? Because that was the big thing. You know, BST Nano, Grandora, they were going to be using nanotechnology to create golf shafts and make better products. And while it's not necessarily, you know, a failure on the product, the brand is, you know, it's gone. It's going away. It's changed. It's done. So, you know, is that any kind of indictment on what it takes to make nanotechnology into graphite shafts?
I don't think so. Depending on the brand you talk to, like you said, we've talked to each shaft company. Some said it matters. Some said the testing they've done has shown it didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard to say. And I think the future will still have some of that involved because everything evolves and it's moving forward. To me, this was about small business getting big quickly and then not understanding how to handle that. They had real talented people. As basically every company has told us, a really good product. I shouldn't say every company. The ones we've talked to about the actual product, not just Grandora, they had a really good product. And they didn't know how to handle that. And in turn, did some things they shouldn't have done when it comes to handling employees. I don't feel right discussing that stuff entirely. But, you know, they didn't handle the employees the right way. So because of that, they're stuck now with funding they have but can't use and all the brands under the BST Nano umbrella gone, at least from my understanding. So I don't know what to make of that really, but, you know, that sits hard for me. The good news is these guys are so talented, they'll latch on with other brands. We know some already have and so on, but I don't know where that sits. I don't think I've ever seen a brand come on as quick and go away as this one has, though.
Especially a brand with such a high quality product. You know, you see some of these little, I like to call them pop-up brands, every now and then come on, be here for a little while and go away. You know, this was real high quality, you know, expensive golf shafts. And you know, they launched in what, September of last year?
Yeah, they kind of launched
November.
In September. Product was available kind of in November. Really was the January launch was their big thing.
You know, now we're in March and they're, you know, we're not even at the Masters yet and they're gone.
Yeah. And it's funny because I remember being out there, right before the end of the year, I'll say November, I don't know exactly when it was, and hearing the buzz about the tour guys were asking for demo shafts before the shafts they couldn't be made fast enough. Whether or not they put them into play, I don't have that information for me. I know some did, some didn't. But they were the buzz was there because they were looking. The guys on tour were so interested in testing it out, and then gone. And listen, there's a lot of good golf shafts out there. Project X Hazardous is so hot on tour right now for good reason. It's a great golf shaft that it's crazy. I know Matrix has the Speed Rules, which is a fantastic golf shaft as well. But this was another alternative and I'm all for choices. And like I said, there were good people behind that brand. So to see it go so fast, it's hard to make it in the golf business. I get that. But how it went, and then of course all the rumors that come afterward with, oh, they lost their funding. That's just not the case. But how it went and how it went down was rather striking.
Yeah, it's now hearing that it's not just about Grandeur Golf, you know, they got rid of the Ellsworth bikes, which, you know, side note, they were really, really cool. The paddleboard company, it sounds like you said, it's a company that got big too quick, didn't know how to handle it, and now everything's kind of defunct.
Time to move on to the next topic. We have another really good one. Toulon Design, can they make it long term? So for those that don't know Toulon Design, you know, Sean Toulon is somebody I've worked with for a long time indirectly. Last week we spent several hours at Toulon Design's headquarters out in Carlsbad Vista area. Note, it turns out his office is literally almost within walking distance of the hotel I stay at when I go out there. Neither here nor there. But for those that don't know, Sean was with TaylorMade Golf for a long time, senior VP there. And, you know, he was kind enough to give THP a shot years ago. And, you know, we talked about that. I think he's glad he did. And I enjoy working with Sean. I didn't work with him much at all. I just enjoyed, you know, working with TaylorMade Golf at the time. Before a lot of the changes took place, I still enjoy working with TaylorMade Golf. And I enjoyed going to see his new setup. It's rather unique. It's a small office. You can see Sean's used to the big, bold things, but it's a small office. It's his family. It's clean because Sean's kind of clean. That came out weird.
That sounded weird.
But I mean, like, you go into the workshop and there's nothing on the ground and things like that. You go upstairs, there's a putting green. And Sean was like, oh, it's not like these other big guys. And I just kept telling him, I'm like, Sean, this is really cool. You don't understand what you have going here. Do you think they can make it?
All right. Flashback to our last podcast, we talked about, you know, the Ben Hogan brand and making it long term. I think Toulon Putters has a better chance of making it long term because I think the putter industry is just so much more boutique and different than manufacturing irons and full line of clubs. So I think they can make it more long term than that. And I'd met Sean before out at TaylorMade. Uh-huh. And the one thing that I picked up at the PGA show was how enthusiastic he was, how proud he was. You know,
I'm going to give a shout out to Fresca. They're not an advertiser, but this is delicious.
Oh, my God. You know, he was so into the product and so happy to talk about the product at the PGA show. And most people are. But when you have somebody, you could see their enthusiasm level is so high about something. That was him at the show. And I'm pretty sure that's what you took away from being out there last week as well.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to get pretty deep on the equipment side of things. And people will be able to follow this if they choose to. If not, they'll catch the gist of it. The putter market, and I'm going to stick strictly to the premium putter market, okay?
Okay.
Scotty Cameron sells the most. I think he sells about 250,000 putters a year.
Mm-hmm.
The next closest thing to him is about 50,000 putters. Again, premium putters only. And from there, you get down to the under 10,000 putter brands. Under 10,000 putters, you can stay in business and be profitable. I don't think there's any doubt about that, especially in the premium putter market. 10,000 putters, if we're talking about $99, I don't think the profit margin is there quite the same. But, you know, I think Sean and Toulon Design can get to that 10,000 putter mark. I am not sure it happens this year, and I'm not sure they want it to happen this year after speaking to him. You know, they're rolling out slow. They're rolling out with the first releases, the limited editions, and then they're going from there. I love what they've done with Toulon Garage. I think it's first of all, it's got a cool logo, but it's got a cool story and everything else. And he's crawling before he walks, and I appreciate that side of it. Let's be honest. I believe that selling 5,000 putters before the end of 2016 is not that high of a goal. I think that's a pretty good goal to have, and I think it's pretty safe. Wouldn't you agree?
I would say it's safe and attainable.
So let's say he gets that, and then the next year he goes to 10, and I don't know if he goes to 20 or 30 or 40,000 putters. I kind of think he will. I think he's got the right mix. He's already got some stuff set up to work overseas in Asia. And, you know, we actually met that gentleman. What a great guy. I think there's an option there where he can really make this thing work as long as the putter works. And let's face it, it has to look good. We're talking about the premium price point. It's got to look good. He's not going to have the Titleist marketing, the Scotty Cameron marketing. But could he be Bettinardi? I think so.
That's exactly the brand that I had in mind was Bettinardi.
Well, that's I'm going on old numbers here. Don't quote me. I'm guessing between 40 and 50,000.
Okay.
I want to say it was 20,000, but that's not right. I think it's 50,000. So could he sell that? I think he could. Price point's the same, roughly. He certainly has the contacts. And don't take away from Bob Bettinardi. He's got the contacts as well. Been doing this a long time. He's making them here. The look is there. If he does the right steps and keeps this thing small, organized, it's something nice. I mean, I'll be honest. Walking through there, you know, his wife's there. His children are there. He's learning about the digital world right before him, you know, and they do a really good job of it. They seem to have the right thing going, and he doesn't know this yet, but I'll be back out there in May, and I'm actually going to ask if we can video their office, do a tour. I think good chance for some camera work to kind of show people around and show what this thing's all about. I think it's pretty cool, but I don't know. I root for every brand, most every brand, but I don't think that number's unobtainable, and I think with putters you can really make it work. It's a hard market to break into and the general scope of things, and you know, Odyssey dominates that market, and they do so incredibly well. High-end use on tour, not paying a ton of players. You know, we know that the Cameron use on tour is a little different model there, but I think he can make it work.
Yeah, I think they have a better chance, if I'm looking long-term forecast, you know, of them versus another equipment brand who's trying to do something, you know, with a full line of clubs. I think the boutique putter line or the premium putter line, you know, that market is there. It's like you're saying, it's hard to break into, you know, with the Scotty Camerons and, you know, the Bettinardis, but it could be done.
Yeah, and we do know that there's some tour use already coming, and he's going to have green grass as well as retail shops available. So it's not going to be one of those new brands that comes out where you have to special order it without ever touching it, which is a good thing. Okay, let's move on to the next topic because, you know, it's a good one. But before we continue, I want to recap where we stand. We've talked about Callaway Live. We both think it expands their audience. We talked about Cleveland Golf, where it's a wait and see, but, you know, we're optimistic about where they're going. We talked about Grandora Shafts, and it's a sad demise, but, you know, there's other great companies out there picking up the slack. And we talked about Toulon Design, and we both think that, you know, the goals are obtainable. So as always, you can follow, discuss, and debate and interact with both myself and Dean on Twitter, at THP Golf and at Dean of THP, all day, every day. So here's the final topic. Now, we're recording this when the Dell Match Play is getting underway, but it's going to air when it's concluded. It's a round robin event instead of single elimination. What are your thoughts? let me preface this, and because we share a similar side on this, and we know that everybody was all, oh, it's just like the World Cup. Frankly, I don't care about the World Cup. We're talking about real sports, not sports that can end in a tie. I'm sure we just lost half our audience, but I don't care. You know, my point is, if you want to make it a round robin, that's fine. I'm fine with a round robin, but don't market it as March Madness and bracketology. It's not. This is a way to keep stars there, and it's no different than not eliminating the cut on the weekends so we can watch Tiger Woods, Ricky Fowler, Dustin Johnson, if they're floundering in a tournament, be there on Saturday and Sunday. It's no different than that to me.
Yeah, there's a few things I don't like about the round robin style, and this is the second year they've done it. Last year was, all right, well, let's see what it looks like. This year just kind of confirmed it to me. So on Wednesday, everyone was getting excited on our forum talking about the golf, and I made a comment of saying, you know, the PGA Tour and WGC, they've given me no incentive to watch golf today because a guy who loses today, we'll say Adam Scott, well, he didn't lose, he got a half, which that's another topic. But a guy that loses today still lives to play two more days. He could lose today, win tomorrow, win the next day, move on. You know, the exciting things used to be Tiger Woods, you know, he was number one. He'd go up against number 64, and it created instant drama. If Tiger was in a tight battle down the stretch, and you could put any other golfer there, but he was the one everybody wanted on first day, you know, number one and all. If he was in a tight battle with four or five holes to go on day one, Wednesday, you were tuning in to watch it because you might not see him the rest of the week. He might be gone, and we saw that happen before. We saw it happen with Rory, too, when he was number one. Losing day one, you're gone. All right, yes, I understand. They're gone for the week. You know, you don't get to see them again. You know, we have a lot of tournaments throughout the year where you can sit and watch these guys play. This was different. It was March Madness of golf. You win or you go home. It's so much different now. It's watered down. I'm not a fan of it.
I'm with you 100%. I use the example like this. Could you imagine, since the real March Madness is going on right now, Duke loses first round this year, and all of a sudden CBS comes on TV and says, whoa, wait, they still have two more chances. It's crazy. But, you know, to take it a step further, school, the underdog story is what creates stars, and there's no other tournament in golf that can create an underdog story like this one. You could see Gonzaga, whoever that might be, Steven Bowditch, or, you know, you could see that person make a run and do something. And yes, it's not the same as March Madness because there's no school colors involved, but they could actually make it that way too. If I'm the WGC and I'm organizing this thing, the guys play in their school colors because it's in March. Mm-hmm. It's single elimination, and you name the brackets after greatness, you know, Jack, you know, so on and so forth. You have the draw. You see what's going on. You root for the underdogs, and you make the actual bracketology. You start contests all over the place for filling out the correct bracket. You make it work. And instead, now it's more about, well, we want people to be able to see Jordan and Phil and all these guys. They're going to see Phil anyway, it looks like. You want them to see these guys, and I get that, but you can see them any other week of the year. This is the one that's different.
And then on the flip side of it, so, yeah, all right, clearly I do not like the round robin stuff. Let's think about it this way now. The way they've scheduled it, it's 2 weeks before the Masters. It's right after the Arnold Palmer Invitational. You get a lot of guys playing from there, going here and playing in this event. And now they're going to be there for – some are going to be there for three rounds of golf. Some are going to be there for seven.
Correct.
Seven. You know, seven. Seven Costanza, and then they're going to go to Houston, some of those guys. If Phil Mickelson wins this event, he's playing in Houston next week.
Did you throw a Costanza in there?
I threw a Seinfeld reference in there. Thank you for catching it.
Yeah.
You know,
Mickey
he's
Mantle,
gonna,
I get it.
He's going to play seven rounds of golf here, and he's going to play in Houston next week, and then he's going to play in the Masters. That's a lot of golf leading up to the first major of the year. I don't like where they've put it in the schedule. I don't like how they've changed the tournament. You know what I do like? The weekend golf, because the weekend golf becomes win or go home.
Yeah, and I have a feeling if somebody wins this who's scheduled to appear next week, they're going to take the week off.
It'll be interesting to see if it's Phil or Jordan Spieth. You know, they both like to play the week before. They're both in that field, and they're both, you know, the headliners going into that field in Houston. So it'll be interesting to see. Maybe that's what I'm going to root for, some chaos.
Yeah, let's root for chaos. That works for me. But, you know, I just look at it and listen, I'm not dogging on the tournament. I'm not making fun of people who love the World Cup system and how it works and saying that the first round doesn't matter. It just matters less. And this was a chance to be different. This was a chance to bring bracketology like you're marketing it and make it real. So for that, I wanted to see the Gonzaga come out of nowhere. Now they're not a nowhere, but I wanted to see these things happen. And you just don't get that anymore. Listen, I get that the fans want to have their superstars at least for three rounds. I get it. And I'm not making fun of that at all. Everybody got their favorites. This was a chance for them to create something new and kind of have the underdog, assuming the underdog lived up to the hype. So that's there you have it. Dean and I agree. Once again, it was pretty much a show of agreement. There you have it.
I didn't get much say in this show. Next show, we're going back to the old format where I get to pick what the right direction is.
You sound like a child.
Done. I just said it. Spoken.
The scene is spoken on the format?
On the format.
There you have it, gang. Another episode of The Dean Has Spoken is in the books. You can follow us on the TH Forum to discuss, debate everything we talked about here, and of course, follow along on Twitter at THPGolf and at Dean of THP. Don't forget to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the Hacker's Paradise so you never miss a new episode of The Dean Has Spoken, The Golf Industry Uncut, or any of the other THP radio shows. And don't forget to leave a review with your thoughts right in iTunes and let us know if you agree with the Dean. We love the engagement. We want to know if you agree with him or not and what you like about the show. For myself, and of course, Dean, we hope you enjoyed this new episode of The Dean Has Spoken. So long, everybody.